I like to play me latest chart topper. It's called Me Fans Are Stupid Pigs.
The following training video contains performances by highly trained professional criminals.
I think the message to psychos, fanatics, murderers, nutcases all over the world is do not mess with suburbanites because, frankly, we're just not going to take it anymore.
What are you doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I had to be at that there crossroads last midnight. Sell my soul to the devil.
What did the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, he taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Podcasting live from the Nut House basement down by the river across the street from the water treatment plant in lovely Lawrence, Kansas. You are listening to Sunglasses After Dark. My name is Nick. It's been a while for some of you who listen to this. For all of those of you who are brand new to the podcast, hi, welcome. This is a thing I do in my basement when I've had too much to drink. It's a pleasure. Long story short, this is a relaunch. Let's just call it that. We're back from the dead. We've got new music. We've got a stack of records that are going to take me weeks to get through. I haven't recorded. It's been an empty household, and I can hear my cat crying upstairs for some ungodly reason. I have no idea why. I'm just going to assume it's because he's a Siamese. We've had a house full of people today. I've been grilling. It's my kid's 14th birthday this week, so we had a party. Because we're going out of town. But that being said, this is a very nice way to calm down. This is a very nice way to relax. Although, I guess for some, playing loud punk rock music isn't necessarily the most relaxing thing in the world, but it's what I do. To the music, then. We've got an interview coming up later on in the program with Brandon Phillips from The Architects about the first installment of the band's Border Wars concept album, in 5 episodes, but we're going to play some music first. From their album, Twisted Around, a 7-inch on Germany's Yo-Yo Records, this is X-Friends with Vexed Question.
first time.
That was Rough Kids with So Sophisticated. That's the B-side to an Into the Zeros, Into the Aughts, however you want to say it, single on Rough Records, a split release with Margin Mouth. They have a new, or relatively new, LP called The State I'm In that's out now on Sorry State Records. That single's good. Their earlier singles are good. That LP will knock you on your ass. Fantastic punk rock. Oh, it's so good. And it's less hardcore than what Sorry State usually puts out. It's definitely a sort of change. They have the occasional, out of left field release, like Whatever Brains and things like that. And I think Rough Kids is another one like that. Before that, Livids with Midnight Stains, one of many innumerable singles Eric Davidson of New Bomb Turk's new band has put out over the last few months. Shirks with Don't Tell Me from their recent LP on Grave Mistake Records. That is not a recording problem. That album just sounds blown out as shit. It's total dirty garage rock and roll. And man, it just sounds like they just ran a line in and just that's how they did it. And we started everything off with X-Friends doing Vexed Question. Let's get right back into the music from their recent album on Don Giovanni Records. This is Nuclear Santa Claus with Time Machine.
Thank you.
from their most recent single, out now on Slovenly Records. That was Mouth Breathers with Nowhere Else to Go. They've got a tour starting this week, going all over the country. You can find more information at their Facebook page. Before that, Radke with Spirals from their single on Replay Records. They've got also a 12-inch called Cat and Mouse. It's an EP that is out now. Limited release of about 300 copies on black vinyl. If you haven't heard about these kids from St. Joseph, Missouri, we've played them on the show a couple times before. You'll hear about them. They've been getting a lot of press in Britain as of late, and as a bunch of other places as well. Damn, they're good. Like each release just tops the next, and seriously, probably some of my favorite rock and roll right now. Before that, Terrible Twos with Alcohol and Adderall from the single of the same name, and we started everything off with New Jersey's Nuclear Santa Claus from their new album, The Order of the New Age, on Don Giovanni Records. That was Time Machine. That is a band I really want to see. They haven't played anywhere near here in the Midwest, but hopefully that will change. So we have an interview here. Brandon Phillips from The Architects. I have probably interviewed this man and his bandmates more times than any other artists over the last decade or so, going all the way back to when I did the local music program Plow the Fields on KJHK, Lawrence's student-run radio station, way back when The Gadgets' Wish We Never Met came out. That was probably the first interview, and that was, Jesus, almost 14 or 15 years ago at this point. Ridiculous. But The Architects have a brand new album coming out. They actually have five. It's an epic concept album entitled Border Wars, and episode one will be released this Saturday at the Riot Room in Kansas City. They are playing a show there. We'll talk about that a little bit more after the interview. But let's go now, and we'll talk with Brandon Phillips from The Architects about The Architects' upcoming album, Border Wars.
So you got this album coming out.
Yeah.
So why an EP, first of all? I'm always curious as to when bands put out EPs.
Well, strictly speaking, because we sort of decided to, write our own rule book for this, strictly speaking, we're not referring to it as an EP. We are, obviously, you could interchange that term with my term, but the way that I've been trying to explain it is, it's a concept album in five episodes. So each episode is approximately EP length with respect to the music, but it's like, but I didn't want to say, yeah, we're going to put out five EPs this year, because it's like, it's not really EPs. If they're all connected, then it's a concept album. It's a series or something.
So since each episode is linked to an associated graphic novel, does that mean that each episode kind of has a different theme or story to tell?
Well, all the longer story plays out over the course of five episodes. I don't know I would say they necessarily have different themes, but I know that like the tone is different a little bit. Like, you know, illustration-wise, between episode one and episode two, there's definitely a change in tone with respect to the illustrations. And music-wise, I think we try to keep the associations between between the music and the comic as loose as we can. I didn't want to have real character-specific songs or like super plot-specific songs. No, there are definitely songs that are derived from some plot point or some character or whatever. But I was trying to be really careful. You know, what we were doing had more in common with Quadrophenia than Tommy.
I like the way that sounds.
Me too.
You had said there that you're trying not to have specific plot points and things like that in the music, And I guess my next question is, did the comics come first? Did the music come first? Were they done simultaneously?
I think there was like a handful of songs, and then there was this need to kind of tie everything together. Like, there was already a handful of songs, and I was, you know, just thinking about, like, I would really love to tie everything together in a more interesting way than what we've done in the past, and I'd really like to kind of throw out the whole rule book on, you know, what we're supposed to do with respect to releasing new music.
You've got the comics, and who wrote them?
I wrote a screenplay that ended up being, that we ended up, rewriting and chopping into five episodes once I realized that how expensive it would be to make a film.
And who did the artwork?
It's all illustrated by Mallory Dorn.
And how did you come into contact with
her? I kind of had, you know, it was like once I realized that we could, you know, there was just no possible way we could undertake a film. It was just like way too much. And I started asking people if, you know, I started asking people about illustrators that were around town. And I was like, I need to find somebody who's, you know, who'd be interested in this. And I happened to luck out, and somebody referred me to Mallory, and she's, you know, she's awesome illustrator and loves doing the work and, you know, loves getting it right. And, you know, and she was just kind of like really into the idea of like from the word go. And I was like, this is great. Lucky break.
What of her prior work that you saw made you think that she was the one for the job?
Well, her Tumblr page at the time, like when I was introduced to her, like her Tumblr page was like just full of a bunch of different illustrations, like in a bunch of different styles. It was like, okay, you know, this is the stuff that I'm just doing for me for fun, and this is like, you know, and this is like some fantasy type illustration, and this is and then there was like two short animated films that she'd done at KCAI that were just fucking great, like really awesome. Her animation work was fantastic. I was super impressed by that. It was like, and so I asked her, like, can you do something that's like a little bit more Frank Miller than fantasy? And she was like, oh yeah, of course. And so, yeah, she was like, you know, Sin City and Hellboy are like my two favorites of all time. So I was like, all right, great. And she started, you know, and we talked a little bit more about characters and settings and stuff like that. And she started sending me character sketches that were like right, exactly perfect on the money. It was like, okay, yeah, you're in.
When it had been a screenplay, did you have, like, certain people in mind that you sort of communicated to her?
I think there was, like, reference certain characters. Like, this character, you know, I was like, okay, so there's this one guy, and he's, like, 400-pound, you know, cholo gangbanger, drug kingpin in prison, and he also cross-dresses and stuff, and she was like, okay, give me an idea what you mean by 400-pound cholo gangbanger. I was like, okay, maybe like, kind of like Hurley from Lost, if he was a, you know, if he was a jailed gangbanger, like a jailed drug kingpin. And she was like, okay, yeah. I mean, I think we probably swapped like 15 or 20 emails just talking about characters, talking about like how, you know, I was like, okay, so main character, Tom, he should be really cute. You know, it's like, you know, he should be cute, but really kind of like nondescript at the beginning. Like he should kind of, he's cute, but he could blend into the walls. Like he doesn't have like a, you know, a sense of style or whatever. So we just, you know, and we would just like kind of go back and forth with that kind of thing. And whenever I could think of a good like film or TV analog, I'd throw it at her. And she was really great about all of that.
It seems just from reading sort of the overview of what this is going to be, that these are a lot of the similar themes that you approach in your music as are sort of the plot points.
Yeah.
Is there something about like that sort of like Midwestern, like the way even the big cities are kind of small town? What appeals
to you
about that?
Yeah, I mean, that has to you know, that has to figure in whether I was, like, you know, doing it intentionally or not. But, like, you know, I've got a, you know, kind of an antagonistic character who's a, you know, a televangelist minister with a megachurch, you know, and, like, that's exactly what I've grown up around is, like, you know, is megachurches. Growing up in the Midwest, you cannot possibly not see megachurches everywhere you go, you know, with these massive, like, 3,000-seat worship complexes. Worship stadium, and so like there's probably a lot of that in there, and you know a lot of these like one of the things that I told the band that I wanted to do was like I want this to be like you know I wanted the comic to kind of be the visual representation of the aesthetic that we kind of already have, yeah, which is like yeah we are a Midwestern guitar band, we are a band from the middle of America that plays. You know, punk rock and roll, and you know all that kind of crap figures into it. You know, all the prairie dust and televangelism and creepy ass country sheriffs and all that kind of thing.
How much input?
And the fucking drug war. Yeah, sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh no. How much input did your brothers and Keenan have on what did you bring to them and what did they give back?
Well, the first time we talked about it, we were on tour and we were talking about it in the band. And I was saying like, you know, the way that I kind of approached it with everybody was like, you know, I was like, does anybody in this band want to make, you know, want to go home and record 15 songs and put them on a piece of plastic and put it out and, you know, and call that our next album? Does that sound like the most exciting thing that we could possibly do? And everybody was like, no, it does not. I was like, okay. So here's what I was like, well, I think that we should do something that's, you know, that's episodic, that, you know, where one thing leads you into the next. And I think Adam raised the question of like, okay, well, how is that different than just a bunch of EPs? And I said, well, because we have to have a longer narrative. We have to have a narrative that involves characters and, you know, and a real story and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, something that will be gripping. And so that people would look, you know, so you might look forward to the next episode the same way that I look forward to the new season of Breaking Bad or, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, that's a really great way to present, you know, to present a story. And everybody was like, well, yeah, I guess you're right. You know, ideally, that would be pretty cool if we had a long narrative with characters and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, let me give it a shot and we'll see what we come up with. And I just thought about it for the whole rest of the tour. And then when we came home from tour, I started banging out the screenplay. You know, once I had a draft that I thought was presentable, I kind of, you know, looked around to, yeah, I did some research to make sure that doing a comic book was something that we could actually do. Because, like, by the time I was done with the screenplay, it was like, nope, there's no way that you could make this movie for less than, like, $3 million, and that's just never going to happen. So I made sure, you know, the first thing I did was make sure that a comic book was something that could be done. You know, and then I kind of brought it back to everybody and was like, okay, here's the screenplay that I wrote. Look it over. Let me know what you think. This is what I, you know, this is what I think we should do. And everybody read over it and thought it was cool. And, you know, there was a lot of questions about, like, what comes first, the comic or the CD? Or, you know, are we ever going to split the music off from the comic? Like, you're always going to get the comic when you buy the music and vice versa. And I was like, yes, we have to because we're embracing a new concept. And everybody was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we're embracing a new concept. We can't uncouple the music from the comic. It has to be all one thing. It was like, okay. And so we went through this. And it was like kind of a long process as we were writing all these songs and stuff to sort of sort out what we were going to do and what was the smartest and the most effective way to do it. Because, you know, I don't really know anybody, like, nobody's ever done exactly this before. And, you know, part of the joy was that, like, we're going to throw out the tried and true, you know, music industry rule book on what you're supposed to do with songs and recordings and just do something cool and not be afraid to be overly ambitious or whatever. And so we kind of had to write our own rule book, which made it take a little while. We got to sort it out as much as I think we need to, I think.
Do you have any sort of worry, or I guess even technically hope, that there will be people who see this as sort of you toured with My Chemical Romance and, like, Gerard Way had his comics, the Umbrella Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any sort of tie-in between those two, or is that just pure coincidence?
I mean, I can't say it's pure coincidence, because it definitely occurred to me. It was like, yeah, you know what? It's like Gerard has a comic, and Coheed was putting out some comics, and there was somebody else who had done a comic, or it was like talking about doing a comic, but none of it, like, the comics were never tied to, they were never tied to the music, and they were never necessarily tied to the band identity. And I was like, I want something that's absolutely, you know, tied and rooted in, you know, the identity and the aesthetic of my band. Like, this is what we sing about anyway. This is what we do anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure on, like, you know, fucking punknews.org, someone will bring that up as though that were the, you know, the worst thing that they'd ever heard of anyone doing. But, I don't really give a shit.
His comics are fucking good. I enjoy them. They're on the shelf right over, like, I can see them from where I'm sitting. But...
Yeah.
Gerard's
books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, Umbrella Academy's great. I haven't seen the Killjoys one that just came out, but, like, you know, everybody who's seen it says that it's awesome, and... So it's like, well, yeah, that's great.
Are you going to have everything, are all of the comics and songs in the can, so to speak?
Everything is in is as close to being in the can as it can be. The way that we sort of worked it out is, like, once we got up to about 32 songs recorded, we're like, okay, well, let's stop working on the whole batch of 32 and just work on the ones that we know are episode one. And then while Mallory is finishing the illustration work for episode one, you know, now that episode one's about to come out, you know, Mallory's already illustrating episode two, and we've gone and done a short day in the studio to do all the sweeping work on all the songs for that episode, and we'll send that off to get mixed and mastered any minute now, and then, you know, and then kind of on to episode three. So it's like we can sort of finish stuff up as we go. And that's really, like, the only way that we could do it, and not spend an unbelievable amount of money, like, up front.
That makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah. It actually kind of keeps stuff pretty fresh too. And it means that if we have some, as is frequently the case, if we have some, like, post-recording, like, bit of brilliance where we accidentally fart out an amazing song, it's like, well, now we still have time. It'd just be on a later episode, you know, like, we still have time to whip it into shape and get it onto a later episode instead of just having to hang our heads and be like, oh, damn it, I wish we'd written that back when we were making the album.
So this is going to basically consume you for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah. It's consumed me for the last 2 years. It will continue to consume us for the next year and a half, yeah. And that was part of the fun, and, you know, I think part of the reason that we all wanted to do it was like, man, it means we're going to be, like, continually creating shit for a year and a half. Like, that's great. That's a lot of fun.
Is it, like, a really, like, refreshing, like, new way to approach things, like, as opposed to just the, like, write, record, tour?
Yeah. Well, the write, record, tour absolutely made sense for a long time, but as the bottom and the middle of the music economy kind of got carved out, it turned into this, I don't know, it kind of turned into a joke. Like, it went from being, like, the best idea to what everybody does to the last fucking thing I want to do on earth is record 15 songs, put them on one disc, and then have that disc come out on a random Tuesday, and then spend the rest of my, you know, the rest of the year trying to be on tour and chasing that Tuesday, because it's like, it's never going to get better than it was on the street day. You know, like, you're never going to have better, you know, you're never going to have more attention on you than on that date, you know? And so you spend like 12 months or 18 months or something chasing the street date, like, just running around trying to make it as good, trying to get back to where you were on the street date, unless you're Madonna, you know, which sucks. Like, that's just, like, that's no way to create stuff, and it's no way to, know, it's a shitty way to live. Like, it's just shitty to like, have all your, you know, be like, you know, pinning not only the last year's worth of work, but the next year and a half or so's worth of work on the thing that comes out, the thing that comes out next Tuesday. Man, fuck that. I want to be working all the time.
I think this sounds like a lot more fun to, like, not only to, you know, you and your bandmates, but, I mean, it sounds more fun on the other side, where it's like you're rather than, you know, like, sitting, waiting for new music, like, you know, like, it's going to come, it's going to be episodic, and it's this.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, it should be, and that was the other thing, is like, how much more fun would this be for, like, for fans, for people who like the band, you know? This would be so much more fun for them than, you know, it's like, oh yeah, the record came out and we, you know, we all tweet about it for a week and then we're on to other things. Like, you know, nah, fuck that. Like, let's keep having fun. It's like if you only had one holiday, you know? There's only one holiday a year. Everybody has to have all their fun and on that one holiday. And it's like, yeah, that's lame. Let's have several.
Well, I thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you.
Many thanks to Brandon Phillips for taking the time to do that interview. Illuminating, and definitely you should go pick yourself up a copy of Border Wars, the CD and comic book both. They are intertwined. They'll have a release party this Saturday, July 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Riot Room in Kansas City. Tickets are $10, and they are playing with Waiting for a Signal, Claire Audience, and The Slowdown. We're going to play a track off of Border Wars Episode 1. This is the second track, and it is entitled We're Going Live. Bloody romance. From a 7-inch on Douchemaster Records, that was Stolen Hearts with Fire. Before that, another Douchemaster 7-inch from The Perfect Fits, that was Songs About Girls. Man, like, that reminds me of, like, a billion artists out there, probably most, like, the real kids. Like, that reminds me a lot of All Kinds of Girls. I'm sure it does you as well, but goddamn, there's... That's the reason you buy records out of the dollar bin, folks. Like, you get gems like that. Before that, Kid Congo and the Pink Monkey Birds doing Lose Your Mind. That is a Seeds cover. Yeah, Kid Congo has a new album out. It is entitled Haunted Head. You can get it on In the Red Records. That is a limited edition single entitled Conjure Man, which is the A-side, and neither of those songs are available anywhere else, with an amazing limited edition screen-printed cover by Ms. Leslie Kay. Before that, we had Dry Bonnet doing a version of Echo and the Bunnymen's Do It Clean, yet another cover that's from their recent single on Replay Records. And we started everything out with the Architects doing We're Going Live from Border Wars Episode 1, again, thanks to Brandon for the interview, and go check them out this weekend. Highly recommended. We got one more set of music. We're going to play some more music from here and there. This is a band that has been broken up for quite some time, but one can always hold out hope that they'll play a reunion show. It seems every other artist does at some point or another. From their split with Tablets of Orion, this is Salt the Earth with Concrete versus Cranium, Part 2.
Thank you. see the outline in your line. I feel the shake of uneven table legs, and I can't sit back and help you celebrate. The world is braiding, and time is bending, so I can go tonight and try to keep you both from burning. I bring you bad news from another place, even if it means that I am made to be erased. I love you more than both of you can say. I can't bear to see you turn.
That was off Loris Stevenson's recent single entitled Runner. That was a limited edition sort of preview to her most recent album, Wheel, which is also equally fantastic. That track, The Fire, is exclusive to it. And damn, she writes wonderful, beautiful songs. If you've read any of the press surrounding Wheel, you know how good this album is. If you haven't heard it, I highly recommend you go out and buy it. It's fantastic. It's emotional. And yet, despite being about some really dark material, it's remarkably pretty and uplifting. I hate to say pretty. Like, anytime I refer to like a female artist and I say the music is pretty, it sounds condescending, and that's not my intention whatsoever. It's pretty in the same way that like Hum is pretty, where it's just intense and beautiful. Before that, State Lines with Plenty of Time from their recent single, Sway Slow from Jowl's 10-inch release. And we started everything off with Salt the Earth doing Concrete versus Cranium Part 2. We reviewed that Jowl's record for the website, and man, it's good. Like, it's intense. Like, I'm not, like, a huge usual, like, a 10-inch fan. I mean, I like 10-inches. I think they're a neat format, and I think it's a great way to get, like, an EP without it being, like, a huge, like, 12-inch or, like, crammed onto a 7-inch. But, Jesus Christ, that cursed 10-inch. Go buy it now. Tiny Engines. It's, man, it's good. Oh, damn. Really good. And that about sums it up. So, yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks with an interview with Kevin Dredge of Waxwork Records, along with a bunch of new music. We're going to try and keep this show going on a little more regular schedule. As always, thank you for listening. Tell your friends to download and listen to the podcast. Tell your friends with bands and record labels to send me stuff for play and review. And until next time, thank you for listening.